He was seen on TV walking to a bus to be taken to Baghdad. The article quoted him as saying later that he didn't know how he had survived. He was really surprised that he made it out with only a few bruises. As I looked at the picture, I gasped. This was a picture of Kentucky Boy from up on the mothership. But how could that be? I had seen him only last night sitting on the edge of his bed in the hospital of the mothership. That night I traveled up to the mothership as soon as I could. "How's Kentucky Boy?" I blurted out. "Oh, he's fine. I've got to see him," I blurted out. I saw his picture in my Earthside newspaper as having been located behind Iraqi lines. I ran for the door of his hospital bay. Suddenly, telepathically, they understood. A woman stood blocking my way. "No. You can't see him. It would change everything." I tried to push past her to go through the door, but two more people stopped me. I couldn't push past them. I was simply not allowed into that hospital bay. I tried later to go in, but no matter how hard I tried, I could not budge the door open. Other people could go in and out of the door, but I couldn't go through the door. They had put a frequency lock on it, so I was unable to get in to see him. My feelings were very hurt. I simply did not understand what was wrong. Unfortunately, everyone was too busy with other casualties to stop to explain anything to me at the moment. Later, I was told that they had been able to bend time back to the day of his injury. Using the transporter beam, they had very gently placed him near where his helicopter had gone down. They knew it would only be a few hours until he would be found. A few bruises were allowed to remain on his chest so he would recognize that he had actually been injured. The miraculous healing aboard the mothership was blocked from his conscious memory. He was left simply with the thought that he had been blown out of the helicopter to a place of safety. But I couldn't be allowed to go in and see him and talk with him with the knowledge he had already been returned to Earth. Truly, that would have changed everything. The Pleiadians on the mothership had discovered that returning an injured person to a location too far distant from the place where his helicopter was shot down creates too many questions that can't be answered. This had been discovered when mended bodies had been brought back to Earth during the Vietnam conflict. Someday, I may have the privilege of meeting Kentucky Boy down here in Earth space. I may be allowed to tell him this story. I wonder if he will believe me. I spent a lot of time thinking about all of this. I was trying to understand the concept of bending time backward. Then I remembered a conversation I overheard some years ago. It was late one Saturday night at an officers' club at an army post in the Midwest. Two lieutenant colonels who had been Green Berets in Vietnam were having a heated discussion over their drinks. I know that damn village was there, because we had scouted it out the day before. We had heard there were Vietcong hiding there. So damned if we didn't lay a barrage of artillery on it. But the next morning when we went to take a look for ourselves, we couldn't even find the village. Hell, it wasn't even there. There weren't no artillery shell holes either, no huts with thatched roofs, no people, no bodies, no nothing. It was just a bunch of damn jungle. He paused, and took a deep breath. It just looked like the place where we had camped overnight. The colonel said with a whispered intensity, "I've heard about things like that from other people, but I couldn't believe it. Hell, I thought they were making it up." The other lieutenant colonel was shaking his head. "Hell no. They weren't making it up, it was true. I saw it with my own eyes. I can't explain what happened, but I saw it. And there was no sign of a village anywhere for 5 miles around." A beading of sweat had appeared on the first officer's forehead. He looked like he had seen a ghost. Some time later, I asked other officers who had been in Vietnam if they knew about anything similar to that. More often than not, my question would be met with wide open eyes and silence on the subject. Usually they would disappear from the area where I was right after that. Now that I have had time to think about it, I have to consider that maybe transporter beams could actually pick up a whole village. Then a landscape that had existed before could be overlaid on the area. To the casual observer, that would appear to be incredible. But it certainly made the story of Kentucky Boy much more plausible. With all of this in mind, it is important to keep an open mind to possibilities. Time may not be linear after all. Chapter 6: Crisis Aboard Ship. The Persian Gulf War changed many of the priorities on the mothership. Each night I would race up to the mothership ready to go to work and assist in dealing with the casualties of the Persian Gulf War. One night I saw a stunning sight as I arrived. The little doctor was right outside Adro's conference room. He was jumping up and down. He was very upset. His long white jacket bounced right along with him. "We have to bring them up here. I can save all of them. I know we can. There is nothing impossible with our technology. Let me do it." Adro's tall frame was standing in his way. "No, we cannot do it." He was shaking his head. His arms were crossed over his chest and he looked down at the little doctor. "It would upset the people of Earth too much. That would just be too unsafe for them. But they will all die if we don't help them," wailed the little doctor. "We could bring up the whole village up here and heal them all. We did it before. We did it in Vietnam. We can do it now." There were a lot of people standing around watching. "Yes, we did it in Vietnam and it caused too much trouble for everyone, even for the people we were trying to help." There were too many questions they were asked when they got back to Earth again that they were not able to explain. Adros shook his head. "We can no do that again." "Yes, Bill Cooper as well as Robert Dean told that extraterrestrials mixed in the Vietnam Wars, in some of their lectures. Then I learned that an entire village in Iraq had been hit by artillery. Everyone in the village was either dead or had injuries. There was no one left to help the injured. Even the little hospital in the village had casualties among all its doctors and nurses. From what the little doctor had said, it looked as if the whole village would die unless help arrived. I felt very sorry for him. He was trying so hard to help humanity, even if it was only one by one. War is a terrible thing, but it is not a war that we are part of. Therefore, we do not have the authority to interfere in mankind's wars. We only have permission to act when we are requested to do so. We can't go in and pick up a whole village." Adros was adamant. "How could we heal them all and then send them back to Earth? They would all know one another, and when they saw one another in the hallways here on the mothership, they would become curious as to what was happening. We simply could not block all of the memories of the people who live in the village. Eventually there would be some bleed through of a memory of being treated here, which would cause more of the people to remember. There could be so many people who would remember their stay up here that it would create a problem. These people might even go insane later, trying to come to grips with the memory of being here on our mothership. Would you save their physical bodies simply to allow their emotions and minds to break down later?" Tears were running down the cheeks of the little doctor as he pleaded to be allowed to bring them all up and take care of them, but Adros was adamant. "It was only later that I learned about a young US soldier who had been injured and been picked up in Vietnam. He had been healed of drastic wounds on a different mothership. 11 days later he had been placed back down 500 miles away from where he had last been seen in the jungles of Vietnam. When found he was even wearing a clean uniform. His conscious memory of his healing had been blanked out for many years. His treatment at the hands of his own countrymen was incredible. He endured interrogations, which went on for hours as to where he had been for the 11 days he had been missing. He was even active of collaborating with the Viet Cong. The final indignity was that he was shipped back home to a military hospital on the east coast of the United States inside a glass box to be inspected like a laboratory rat for some kind of strange disease. It was no wonder Adros had wanted to spare all of the people of the village that kind of treatment." Adros spoke more kindly to the little doctor. "Even if a lot of the people die to their physical bodies, in the time after that in the world of spirit, they can understand the horrors of war. There will be those of their guides on the other side who can help them erase these awful soul memories. Then when they are born again onto Earth, or somewhere else, they will be warriors for peace." He went over to the little doctor, leaned down and laid an arm on his shoulder. "I'll tell you what you can do though. You can choose 50 or so from the village to bring up here for mending, fixing their bodies." He smiled a moment. "You might want to bring the children up here. They would still have full lifetimes ahead of them and might be more willing to accept what they would see here without it upsetting their psyche." 50 you say?" asked the little doctor. "Maybe 60. Maybe 60. Adros nodded. While they are here, we may have to set up a special education program for all of them. You know, it just might work out. They could become emissaries for peace in the Middle East, that is, if they choose to do so. So saying, everyone went to work. The blue transporter beams were busy bringing the children up to the mothership one by one. In later visits, I heard the sounds of children singing together, sitting on their beds with all their bandages on. They were remarkably happy. I prayed that they could plant seeds of peace when they returned to Earth. Insert matching picture to this. Chapter 7 Video, to Atlantis. After I saw the proof down in Earth space that the healing of the soldier I called Kentucky Boy was genuine, I approached the healing center with a renewed respect. The dedication to healing I could well understand. However, the ability to bend time and space in order to place him back where he would be found only hours later simply boggled my mind. Now that he was safely home again, I was allowed to wander into the ward where he had been. The other soldier who had been in the next bed, the Iraqi soldier, an enemy when on the battlefields of Iraq, was sitting on his bed, looking cheerful and almost well. I was curious about him, for he was chatting amiably with other soldiers like himself. When he noticed me, he grinned widely and waved. His fellow soldiers looked at me in great surprise. "Do you know yet when you are going back home?" I asked. "Oh no. I like this place, don't want to go back there. It's hot there and too many bombs going off and people telling you what to do, point a gun at somebody. I like it here better." "Yes, I can imagine," I chuckled. "Sit down here and stay with me," and he patted the edge of his bed. "No thanks, I have to go now," and I wandered among men who were in various stages of healing, from both sides of the Gulf War conflict down below. Here at least it was a peaceful place. The next evening when I arrived, the Iraqi soldier was waiting for me, all smiles and wanting me to sit with him. This time though, I had other things to do and turned away to walk down a hallway. He jumped out in front of me, grinning and begging me to stop. This was getting a bit thick, so I tried to duck around him. It didn't work. There he was, blocking my way, with a look of longing. "Just choose your ability to move somewhere else. If you think hard about it, you can do it in the blink of an eye," I heard telepathically. So mentally I moved out onto the boulevard outside the healing center. I actually hadn't been out here for some time, so I took time for a stroll. People nodded and smiled as I passed. They all looked so familiar, but I was getting used to that. The next evening's visits were no better. The Iraqi soldier was always waiting for me, grinning in my face. My lack of interest in him didn't faze him at all. Instead, he seemed to consider my reluctance to be an interesting challenge. He followed me wherever I went, still looking at me with a sideways yearning glance. All this was getting a bit sticky. Others noticed and smiled, but I wasn't enjoying it at all. I was feeling penned in, always having to mentally jump somewhere else. I couldn't help but hope he would be returned to Earth soon. One evening, the woman whom I had first seen in the control room met me as I came up on my astral travel. I peeked around the corners of the healing center thing to see if my nemesis, the Iraqi soldier, was around. There he was at the end of the hallway, so I headed the other way. The lady whom I had met that first night fell in step beside me. "Why does that fellow always want to be following me?" I complained. She smiled, "Well, take a look at yourself in that mirror over there." My reflection shocked me. I appeared to be about 30 years old. Any evidence of aging seemed to have dropped away. Lines by my eyes were smoothed out. The extra flesh around my chin disappeared and my skin appeared as soft and unlined as a baby's skin. "What gives?" I asked. "Well, our gravity is much less up here, so there is nothing to pull your skin down. Then too, the atmosphere we have up here sustains us in ways your atmosphere down on Terra does not. In truth, we can decide to look like any age we want here in the mothership." She was chuckling at my newfound understanding. "Well, this is the first time that my youthening has gotten in my way aboard the mothership. I guess I'll have to shift gears and be more watchful, just like when I was 30 years old." She seemed to take pity on me, since I was so effectively blocked out of the healing center now. "Would you like to see some of our videos of the early history of Terra? We have some very interesting ones of Atlantis." Oh, yes. I'd like that, I breathed with a sigh of relief. The film from Atlantis. There were other people from Earth space waiting in the small theater, aboard the ship. It was mostly white with decorative pillars placed here and there around the side walls. I waited for the lights to dim, as I was used to in movie theaters, but they never did. Suddenly ahead of me appeared a wide avenue that stretched into a city. It was beautiful and bright. A lovely young woman with brown hair who was wearing a costume draped in the style of the Roman toga came down the avenue and faced us. "Welcome to Atlantis," she began. "We are pleased to share the information about Atlantis with the people of the future. It is important to understand that the civilization of Atlantis did not just happen. It was planned and nurtured for millennia. When the hierarchy of the Great Ones first looked down upon the Earth, they saw that the Earth itself was very beautiful, but that most of the people who lived on Earth were very primitive. They lived from hand to mouth. They also lived in great fear. They were afraid of animals and, to some extent, they were afraid of one another. This fear was eating into what little intellect that they had, and each generation was less capable of managing its affairs than the previous generation. It was then that the Great Ones from other star systems looked down with great compassion from the higher dimensions. They decided to take action to assist in the development of mankind. This was a great sacrifice for them, because they had to step down their vibrations so that they could even tolerate the atmosphere of the Earth and its lower vibrations. They were very much aware of the magnetic hues of the Earth. These lines encircled the Earth and acted to keep it together, to stabilize it. Imagine for a moment the Earth looking like one of the balls that is used in sports, the soccer ball for instance. It is composed of many plates held together with strong seams in between. These seams are like the magnetic lines of the Earth, and where they cross one another they became twice as powerful. It was near one of these power spots that the Great Ones decided to establish a colony. This power spot enabled them to exist on the Earth, because the vibrations there were higher. They began to project love unto the surrounding countryside, to overwhelm and burn up the fear that hung in the very atmosphere. In place of the fear, there began to develop a curiosity among the humans instead. In times to come, this would lead to a natural development of the intellect. Mankind at that time had such a limited vision that the colony of the Great One simply appeared as a great glowing light on the landscape. Humanity was fascinated by this light and was comforted by it, but they were afraid to come very close to it. So in the colony of the Great Ones, the beings realized that some of their beings would have to step down their vibrations even further so that they would appear to be more like mankind. They would appear as the gentle teacher and would help mankind raise itself above its almost animal existence. By ones and twos, the beings ventured away from the colony. They were able to create hoes and spades using just the power of their thought. They began to work a space of land and planted tomatoes, squashes, potatoes and beets. Later they planted wheat, rye and other grains. These crops took more time to harvest and to thresh out the grain, but they were more long-lasting than the softer fruits and vegetables which humanity had simply been able to pick from the forest. As curiosity overcame their fear, various members of mankind drew near, first watching from a distance. Then they began to learn how to plant foods for themselves. This was the first great step in extending civilization to the people of the Earth in Atlantis. Starvation was soon a thing of the past, and the next step in civilization could be introduced. As our guide explained these developments, we were seeing the landscape change from a tangled jungle to a patchwork of pleasant gardens and farms with picturesque roundhouses, often made of mud and topped with hats of grass. As one man developed a surplus from his garden, he learned to barter with his neighbor. Soon after this innovation developed, there gradually appeared small villages that dotted the landscape. The Great Ones had been holding a pattern of love and beauty and projecting it to the Earth in an ever-widening circle. However, although mankind had become more peaceful and settled, their intellect had not developed to the same degree. After much discussion, the Great Ones decided to try an experiment to raise the intellect of mankind. Some of the genes of the Great Ones would be donated and integrated into mankind. Mankind was surveyed, and some of the most intelligent of the females were identified. Their confidence was cultivated by some of the males of the Great Ones. This included teaching the women to raise their expectations for their children to have a better life. It was only then, and with their full consent and understanding, that these women were impregnated by the males of the Great Ones. The males then agreed to remain on Earth to become husbands to the women and the teachers of their offspring. This would be a great sacrifice, because most of them relinquished the right to return to the original colony. These men were given great respect and honor because of their decision to remain on Earth to become husbands to the women who would become the mothers of their children. They were reminded, "In making this decision, you will become fully human. You will be subject to the normal human process of aging. You will relinquish the privilege of rejuvenation of the body that has been available to all here in the colony of love and light. In addition, you will have to allow your bodies to die. Your soul will pass over onto the realms of spirit where we will welcome you back most hearty. However, you must then be born into human bodies again. Much of the memory of your existence in the realm of spirit will be erased when you are born again on Earth. You will be allowed to keep vague memories of your former existence for a few short years, but as you get the ability to run and play, you will have to surrender even these memories, so that your human playmates can accept you as one of them as you grow to maturity. Some things you will be allowed to keep, even as an Earthling. You will have a hunger for learning. You will have a great curiosity about everything that you see. You will want to understand how and why it works. You will be taught by your brothers and sisters of the colony of love and light, who still remain here sustaining the power of love and light. Sometimes this teaching will be done on the inner levels or in dreams. At other times, you will be taught by someone who suddenly appears and may seem to be another human like yourself. They will be there to teach both you and your fellow humans at the same time. Thus you will quickly be able to help in the uplifting of humanity. It will sometimes be difficult for you at times, because those who study and struggle with you will be discouraged at how quickly you learn from the teacher compared to how long it takes them to comprehend the same information. You may find envy and jealousy projected at you. Do not lash out, but treat all persons with kindness and understanding. Help those who are not able to grasp the information as quickly as you can. In your life upon the earth, you are to become a model of manhood, strong but protective. You will be respected by your sons and be an inspiration to your daughters. Later, when they are old enough to comprehend, you can tell them of your journey from the stars, to live on planet Earth. Then it will be time to take your places as the teachers of others of mankind, ever inspiring, gently guiding, and teaching them to restrain their baser instincts. As they strive for a finer quality of life, begin to teach them the crafts of creating useful and decorative items. Then teach the arts of creating objects of beauty and inspiration, and teach them the harmony of music and singing, and the joy and upliftment of dance. Because of this, they will raise their eyes to the heavens to wonder about the lives of the Great Ones, which they will then be able to sense. Educate them as to the possibilities, the wonderful possibilities enjoyed by the Great Ones, which can also become available to whomever of mankind wishes to attain the mastery of them. These noble goals will take time, in some cases, many lifetimes of your own, to achieve. For your dedication and concern for mankind, we of the Colony of Love and Light give you great honor and respect. You go forth to Earth with our blessings. We leave you with the reminder that we will always be available to assist you if you should ask for it. In the asking for assistance, you will be able to convey to mankind that we are also available to help any and all of them who ask, but that it must be their decision. Now go down to Earth and may your forthcoming amnesia/memory loss be blessed with aspirations to return to us intact, unblemished by the scars of Earth. So saying, the Honored Ones departed for many lifetimes upon the Earth. They have been the real civilization makers. You, who are viewing this story of the early days of Atlantis, may well have been one of them. If you have experienced a longing to return to some distant place, but you are just not sure where it is that you want to go, it is all right. Your many lifetimes have put you on the path of remembrance and return. Be grateful for the memories that are now beginning to awaken in your hearts. Yes, that is where your soul resides, and when it aches, it is your heart soul who is remembering its former existence. This is enough for one session, child of Earth. Think about what you have just heard. Return at another time and learn of your past and of your future as well." The lovely lady who was our guide from Atlantis smiled at us and waved a farewell as the video faded and we returned to an awareness of ourselves in the theater. As I looked around, I saw that there was more than one eye that glistened with the tears of remembrance. It was now time for me to return to my physical body upon planet Earth and to digest what I had just learned, that we are not alone, and that, in truth, we have been seeded from the stars. Note: it was about this time, in the early days of April 1991, that Tedros, commander of the mothership, came to me and said, "Kartriya, it is time for you to go to your computer and start writing down the stories about your experiences up here on our mothership. There are many people who live down on your Earth who would be very glad to read about your stories about the mothership. Actually, they are tired of reading all the fear-based information about extraterrestrials. You would be a breath of fresh air for them. You have the ability to observe and accurately write down the stories about our Pleiadian mothership. You also have the ability to write about your adventures in a way that would be understandable and interesting to the residents of Earth. Oh, but sir, I'm afraid I don't want to have some of the harassment directed at me that has been directed at other people who have tried to tell the world about extraterrestrials. I was shrinking from this assignment." Adros shook his head firmly. "You don't have to be afraid anymore. The need for that kind of fear is all gone now. In truth, you must do this. This is part of your mission." So I tried my hand at writing some of the stories. Some of the early chapters in this book appeared in the magazine, Connecting Link, which is no longer in existence. I was still apprehensive. However, I was surprised and thrilled to get some fan letters in which the writers said they appreciated reading my stories. And so my courage grew. It was almost 2 years later that I discovered why I didn't need to have fear anymore. A news item in Nexus magazine stated that just prior to the Apollo moon landing, in the middle of July 1969, NASA had published a regulation in the Federal Register that authorized NASA to impose quarantine on any human being who had had contact with extraterrestrials. Such fears, in light, are understandable when no one had ever been to the moon before. In 1982, a CIA official mentioned that such quarantine was in effect in the Federal Register. There was no appeal allowed, and not even a federal judge could spring the person out of such quarantine. Go to a library that carries government documents and read it for yourself. Look in Title 14 Aeronautics and Space, Volume .34, No. 135 of the Federal Register, for Wednesday, July 16, 1969. Part 1211, entitled Extraterrestrial Exposure, was added on pages 11,975 and 11,976. It set very definite limits on people who had contact with A's. This regulation certainly put a chill on anyone sharing what they knew about A's with the rest of the world. In 1994, I began looking through the Federal Register again, starting with 1969. By diligent searching through the years following that, I discovered that in April 1991, Part 1211 had been removed. On Friday, April 26, 1991, on page 19,259, it stated ... that it was no longer of any use. HMM. There is that unusual time factor again, considering that I learned about this before April 8, 1991. Chapter 8. How Atlantis Develops Link to Extract, with some illustrations on this. The next evening I was ready and waiting at the small theater room, anxious to learn more about Atlantis. To think that those souls who helped bring civilization to Atlantis so many thousands of years ago could have come from other star systems was mind-boggling. My mind was constantly being stretched in new ways on my visits to the mothership. Somewhere the third-dimensional television program about Atlantis began again. Or maybe it was a hologram. The introductory music sounded like trees rust in the forest. There was the sound of water rushing down a small streamlet, gurgling over stones as it went. This time the lovely lady who was our guide to Atlantis walked out of a sunlit forest glade. She continued her narrative. The story which you saw before was greatly compressed in time.